Jazz.com.
So remaining in context, I would say that in 5 years from now, 5 years is not a very long time, but I would still want that in 5 years from now, I would like to see Indians getting access to knowledge democratized in their languages. And that's the main reason why even Reverie has this mission of, you know, bridging the language divide on the internet. Because internet is the only democratic medium from where contributors of knowledge are able to do that without having to tax themselves. And consumers of knowledge are also able to get benefit of that without having to pay for it.
Namaste, namaskaram, namaskara, vanakam, sat sri akal, adab, kurumjari. Yes, this is Pathbreakers. My name is Upendra and I'm your host. And welcome to Pathbreakers on Awaaz.com. We have a very interesting subject for you today, and it's about languages and Indian languages in specific. We have 22 official languages in India, 13 different scripts, and over 720 dialects. And for some reason, language is also one of the country's biggest discriminators in India today. Now, to add another layer to this, there are also at least 175 human biases. Now, why is this important? Very simple. As Indians, there is a very large population which is positively biased towards English and negatively biased towards the other languages. With 125 million people who speak English in India today, we can quite clearly see that the number who converse in languages other than English is far higher. And it's also quite funny that we call languages other than English to be vernacular. So things are a little twisted out here. And that essentially is a divide which our guests today are trying to solve for the government, its agencies and enterprises in India today. So our guests today are the co-founders of a company called Reverie Technologies. Arvind Pani, who is one of the co-founders, is a graduate from NIT Rourkela. He's spent time with Intel, LMT, John Deere, and SAIL before his stint at Reverie Technologies for well over a decade. He's passionate about bridging this divide between language and much more. On that note, Arvind, a very warm welcome to Pathbreakers.
Thank you so much, Upendra. Pleasure to be here.
So along with Arvind, we have Vivek Pani, who started off his career over two decades back with CDAC. Some of you might remember that to be the Center for Development of Advanced Computing. They used to do some phenomenal work back in the days when technology was, let's say, at a slightly earlier phase in development. He's traversed developing advanced multilingual skills for early computing devices and word processing software for computers to leading today's state-of-the-art AI-driven Indian language technologies like automated speech recognition, machine translation, text-to-speech, and a bunch of stuff which is really sounding very complicated. But just let's say he's trying to make life simple for people who speak and converse in languages beyond English. Vivek, on that note, a very warm welcome to Pathbreakers.
Thank you, Upendra. I'm happy to be here.
All right. So, Arvind, let me start off with you. If you could just help us understand, what does Reverie Technologies do exactly?
Okay. So, first of all, our company's registered name is Reverie Language Technologies. Although it's a little long, but the intent was deliberate, okay? Because we wanted to have the word language in what we are doing because that's core to us. It's been 10 years since we started Reverie. And if I have to explain in very simple terms what we do, our vision is to have language equality on the internet in India. What does language equality mean? Now, if you take all the media, historically, what we classify as traditional media would be your print media, your television, your cinema, all of those. Now, to be able to engage with any of these media by the users, they don't have to do anything different to be able to engage in their languages, which I call as Indian languages, than what they have to do for engaging in English language. You want to subscribe or buy a newspaper, you could buy it in English or in Indian language. You want to watch a television channel, you just flip channels and you can watch an English channel or an Indian language channel. You want to go to a cinema to watch a movie, you can buy a ticket for a cinema for an English movie or you can buy for an Indian language movie. So there is absolutely no difference there. But when we are talking about digital, internet to be precise, then there is a big gating factor, which is called English, right? And someone very rightly said that Indians have to pay a very heavy tax, which is not known, that is called English tax. And internet is one media where we can see that very clearly, blatantly. The mobile phone that we purchase, which has become ubiquitous, and then that becomes the dominant channel to be able to access the internet for anyone. You buy a phone, start a phone, everything is in English. The phone UI is in English. To be able to even change that, it's a nightmarish experience to be able to do that. Then you start an application, that's in English. You start internet, that's in English. Content on the internet is in English. Your ability to interact either through, mostly through text typing, that's in English, right? So you can see that. So anybody who does not know English, is not comfortable, is not able to access that. So which brings back to the fact what I started with, our vision statement of language equality. So if you take all the traditional media that I just said, there is equality of access, right? You don't have to do anything different to be able to access. And what happens when you're providing equality of access? The usage is lopsided towards Indian languages. Because India still, no matter if we what we say about English being an aspirational language, and we have been independent since about 70, close to 75 years now, despite that, there are not more than 4% Indians who can claim that they can live with English and they don't have dependency on any other Indian languages, just 4%. And which is what I mean about equality, that the moment you are making the access equal, preference is for Indian languages. And on the internet, unfortunately, the way internet was created in India, because everything has been created and started in English language, the equality has been lost, right? By design, we are keeping the Indian language users away from the internet. So that's what, as a company, we are doing. We work with other businesses, with government, to be able to enable the engagement with their users in local languages, whether it is content in local languages, whether it is their ability to search, whether their ability to type text in local language, or have an interface that is voice. All of those things are part of the user engagement, and that's what Revery does.
Got it. Now, we spoke about this a little earlier, Vivek. Can you help us understand how are Indian languages different from English structurally?
This is a very interesting question. English has got 26 letters, and there is no connection between the letters as they are arranged. For example, A has got no connection with B. D has none with C, and so on. These 26 letters also do not really maintain any phonetic consistency. That is, English is considered a non-phonetic language. Indian languages, on the other hand, are very different. The alphabet itself is arranged with the vowels starting first, and then the consonants separated in five vargas. If you look at it, it will appear as if somebody has actually thought through and put that scientifically out there. So you form conjuncts, you have matras that join consonants. So therefore, you have a grammar to the script, and the languages are phonetic. So these are the things that make these two languages fundamentally very different.
So Vivek, help me understand. So the internet is, of course, a railroad of sorts, right? And what both of you are saying is it's been built on a vocabulary of English in a nutshell. Now, why is it difficult, or what does it take for the internet to accept a code or a language which is not based in English? What is that journey like? Can you help me understand this?
So the internet or the digital world has got no differentiation between what is English data or non-English data.
Okay.
Because as long as it is data, there is no problem in transferring or passing out from one place to another or one device to another. What Arvind actually meant is that when internet came, or for that matter, when computers first came, computers were not invented in India. And therefore, from the place where it was invented and the people who invented those, obviously they would tend to have the basic facilitation with the languages that they speak or use. and that was English. Computers came from the United States of America. Internet also was developed and popularized from there. By the time internet came to India, the primary access application for internet is the web browser. And the devices from which you will access are the computers. So neither the computers nor the web browsers had the ability to show Indian language characters or text. So for a very long time, we as a nation started promoting the internet as a medium without any facilitation for our languages. And, there were a lot of local companies and technologies who continued to work very hard towards making that happen in one way or the other. But, internet as a global technology and access medium did not at that point in time consider other languages. And for a very long time, because that remained, so it got a huge English lead. And that continues to be to remain till today.
Okay, so if you can help me understand, let's say there is a Hindi or a Devanagari keyboard, correct? What really is happening out there? Because there are English keyboards, then you have a Devanagari keyboard. What really is happening between the keyboard and the internet?
Okay, there is a long answer. There is a short answer. I don't want to give you the short answer because there is a cultural dependency out here.
Sure.
Let's say in India, we did not start using the fork and the knife in our habit of eating. But we emphasized on washing hands very well before we start eating, right? So that is how we, access our food. Now, that is the way that we managed with the way that we would want to eat food. But eating food is fundamental to all, human beings. So it's not that we don't eat or someone else eats or something like that. We do, but we access it differently. Similarly, when computers were developed, the need to be able to write in your language was also felt. But that particular need for English language was felt and solved by borrowing from the typewriter. And that is why you have a typewriter's keyboard available with every computer. That typewriter's keyboard is the English typewriter's keyboard arrangement, which is what we call as the QWERTY keyboard. Now, let us say when you wanted to access the same digital medium or the internet, but you wanted to access in your language, did you really see that the input medium is also fitting your language? You did not. The English language has got 26 letters and there are 26 keys on the keyboard, and which is clearly visible and you are able to manage. But when it comes to Indian languages, we did not even learn to write our languages the way English is written, right? So English is written at the moment you have learned the letters, it's done. You just need to know the spelling and you are able to write. So Apple, A-P-P-L-E. So other than learning the letters from A to Z, you don't need to learn anything else. But in Indian languages, after you have learned from A to H, which is the Varnamala, you don't start writing your name. Let's say if my name is Prakash, I can't write Vivek. So if to be able to write Indian languages, you not only learn the Varnamala or the alphabet, but you also learn Barakhadi, that is the matras. Then you learn the Kanjams or Yuktakshar. Only after that you start writing. Now, how does that translate into the device that you are using or the keyboard that you are using is something that was given no thought. And whatever that has been standardized, which was obviously not created by keeping our languages in mind in the first place, is not natural to our people. So even if you have literacy, for example, in India, we say 70% people are literate. And let me also agree that 10% of them are English literate. Then 100% of those 10% people will be able to write in English on computers. But less than, I don't even know if 1% of that 70% people will be able to write in their languages on the computers. That is where we are.
Got it. So tell me, what has happened in China and Japan? Because I think we all know that they follow their languages to the core. For them, their primary medium of communication is still Chinese and Japanese. I'm just stating these two countries as an example. Because the internet infrastructure is, of course, fairly evolved, much more, even Korea, for instance. So what have they done differently compared to what India is doing? Or is it that we are just lagging behind?
No, they are not at all lagging behind. In fact, if you go to China or to Japan, you will be surprised because they would probably not be able to use English on their computers at all.
Correct.
And at the same time, the very thing that I just mentioned, that the access medium, that is the keyboard, is still the same QWERTY keyboard, or at least the design is the QWERTY design.
Okay.
But the good thing is that, you know, even though they have taken the same hardware and, you know, giving their language as a priority, they have given enough thought to, you know, design the keyboard layouts, etc., for their languages. But the most important fact is that in spite that it might be adding to a certain degree of complexity, they have taken enough steps to start teaching that to kids right from the beginning. That is, the Chinese or the Japanese kids, when they start using computers, they are not introduced to the computers in English. They are introduced to it in Chinese. That means if they have learned to write, or if they are being taught in school or at home to write, then they are also being taught how to type. That means there is a parallel that is being drawn. So they know that, okay, if this is how I am doing it in writing, this is exactly how I'm also doing it in typing, to be able to use the same on the computer. So that therefore becomes natural to them. Even if it may not be the easiest, it has become natural. And therefore they have got absolutely zero friction in being able to use the digital. In India, we have these differences and we just never allow people to learn it by telling them about it. There is no teaching there. The schools are still teaching computers. There are computer classes. Computers are introduced in primary schools. But they are introduced and they are taught MS Word and how to type in English, but nothing about our languages.
So help me out here. What you're saying is extremely important. For us, our mother tongue is the primary language that we are born with. English, for many of us, is a language for doing business. And I think most of us are multilingual. But if you were to step into, let's say, a village in Bihar or a village in Andhra, where I'm from, there are too many missing pieces of the puzzle which need to be solved, right? Right from the input device, be it the keyboard or the mouse, the content, there's so many things which need to fall in place. And with all our languages, isn't this difficult? And where does a government start? And if I were to make this even more particular, let's say a government needs to spend 100 rupees installing a computer in a village in Andhra. Should they be putting in a keyboard with English and a keyboard in Telugu? How do you see this panning out? And this question is to both of you, so feel free, jam.
Okay, so Arvind, you want to answer that? If you want to go, you can, and then I can add.
No, sir, go ahead, Vivek. So the only other thing that I would like to mention is, Upendra, the question that you mentioned about Japan, China, Korea and all, right? One of the things that they have consciously done is, one is what Vivek mentioned, that they did not allow English language to develop in their digital ecosystem at the expense of their language, right? So the adequate amount of priority was given, especially China, right? What they did, China and India, the advent of internet was around the same time. And both of us had the same problem, that the internet started in English. So China also had the same choice, that whether they would have the internet in English and think of adapting that or converting that into Chinese language, or they would take the harder route where they would actually ground up, build the Chinese internet in their language. So they chose to build the Chinese internet in their language. And you can see that it is absolutely inclusive. And what is the amount of impact it has made to their economy? So unfortunately, we chose to adopt the internet in English language, and that all happened at the expense of our Indian languages. That's the reason why it has not been inclusive.
So Arvind, thanks for that. And I am going to pick you up on this one in a slightly later segment in terms of strategically, should it have been different and what would have been the outcome? I'm going to come back to that. But Vivek, you were telling me something about how should a government decide which keyboard should go into that school in Andhra?
Yeah, so let's start with the statistics that you gave in the beginning, that 10% of our country's population might be speaking English. I do not know what percentage actually can read and write very well. The rest who cannot speak in English but can still read and write, probably in that case did not need the second language anyway, right? Because they haven't learned that second language till now. I'm considering second means English. So in that case, the confusion of introducing two languages or which language first or which language next did not arise. And secondly, we already have state boundaries based on languages. So I think state governments could have taken a step. But the most important thing is that this particular problem was actually addressed by the Indians and the Indian government, not today, but 50 years ago, at least 40 years ago. So the work on Indian language computing dates back to starting 50 years ago. The first Indian language computer itself was released in 1983. The Devanagari computer was released in 1988. The standards for all the Indian languages was released in 1988. And those were not just adopted by many private companies and the government as well, but also a lot of software based on those were also adopted across all government departments and all states, which meant that people were taught about how to type and how to use local languages, intergovernmental communications, citizen communications, and desktop publishing, the publishing industry, all of them, they started using. There was absolutely no question and no confusion about what should be the keyboard, which should be introduced first, and so on. The idea is that we did not take anything forward from there. From the time that the Indian language technologies were introduced again by the Americans to us, from that time on, we have just given up. And today, after 50 years, we are in a state of complete confusion. What is it that we should do now? That is a huge step backwards. I think the answers are very simple. There are plenty of things that we have already done. We just needed to focus on that.
Got it. Now, you, of course, both of you have been in this language journey for almost a decade or possibly even longer now in your careers. Can you share with us two or three critical inflection points in the journey of India, internet, and languages beyond English? Two or three critical things which you think is really helping shape and explode both access, content, and consumption.
So this is only about internet?
About languages beyond English.
In the context
in the internet context, yes. So to give you an example, is there some initiative taken by the government? So when I'm saying inflection point, you know, those are the path-breaking ones where maybe one bank has done something and then 20 others followed. There was a government ruling and then everything started picking up. So which of those things could be small things also? There are those little sparks which kind of lead to a revolution. So any two, three things which come to your mind which you think have helped shape or helping shape this entire thing?
So, let me try to answer this one. Maybe Arvind can add some more. I am sounding a little, not so enthusiastic about giving a great answer to this one, because there isn't really much that is being done to be able to proliferate the use of Indian languages by the real Indian language users. So just in the previous question, I was trying to answer that we actually did a lot of fundamental work much ahead of, what is being done now. So when the first Indian language solutions were created, I said that there was a first Devanagari computer. But after that, you know, when software for Indian language usage for PCs were created and those were being used, they had no English as precedence. You could actually start using the software without knowing anything about English. You just, open that, install. The installation process will probably also be in your language. And people who had zero technical knowledge were using them. But today, whatever that we have definitely starts with English. It's all English first. And then you are given a choice to be able to change language and adapt. So therefore, there already is enough barrier. But yes, still to be able to try answering, if we look at the reach or the access, they will have to be through a PC or through a phone. Most of the phones are either Android or Apple. Most of the PCs will be Microsoft or Apple. And therefore, you would naturally just depend on these companies to be able to provide you something, without which you are already, you know, not having anything to begin with. And that is where I don't think neither the government nor the banks or no industry is actually able to do much. Second is, we tend to feel very happy when there is in, let's say, Google's Translate or in speech feature, they add a new language, new Indian language. That particular language users, they feel happy about it. So those steps definitely are helping, you know, the boost of the use of those languages. But it is very undemocratic till today. That is that, you know, there might be a lot of other great works that are happening, that are being done by plenty of people who are passionate about their own languages and are technically also very good. But there is no possible way that, you know, those growth can happen and be given out.
So let's simplify this. If, according to you, both of you, what are those three fundamental things you think which need to be done to make it much easier for people to work in with the internet in languages beyond English? What are those three things which need to be done, according to you?
The first is fix our language standards. Our language standards today are in a way that is so terribly flawed that it has got difficulty with users using. It's not that they can't start using it. They can. In fact, it gets a lot worse when you have something that you can immediately start off and then have problems with it later, right? Because then the beginning becomes very easy. So you adopt and then you are stuck with something terrible. So fixing the language standard is very important. Second is fixing font standards also, because one of our biggest usage is in readership. And to be able to read, you need a good experience. And which is where we are completely, stuck with pretty terrible and complex standards that have been imposed on us by Microsoft, Adobe, etc. The third is teach in schools. So in schools, if we introduce, you know, our languages, I think those kids are going to go back and also tell their parents how to use everything.
Okay, thanks for that.
So Vivek basically mentioned about the three things, and I completely agree with him about what needs to be done so that this entire aspect of equality that we are talking about. And the last point that he said, I will just like to mention that the digital literacy, how do you use digital in Indian languages, is something that is important. That's what Vivek is talking about. Now, going back to the inflection point, okay, I do see that, of course, to the level of where like China is, or China, Korea, Japan, this kind of countries are, we are nowhere close to those places. And if we have to do that, to go there, it has to be radical. But if you ask me right now, there are few things which I do see that which were non-existent, which are there today. In fact, going back to the time when we started, mobile phones, even if you could send a message, right, there was no way the message could be read on a mobile phone, because none of the mobile phones supported display of Indian languages, right? In some form or the other, it was there, but not that all Indian language display could be supported. So that continued as late as till 2017 or 18, if I'm not mistaken, where government actually put a mandate that anybody who is selling phone in India must support the display of 22 official languages which are there, recognized by the constitution. So that was one. Second one is, so in absence of not teaching digital literacy, there was no way people could have used, and of course the standards that Vivek brought out, there was no standard keypad that people could get used to. And even if there were, whatever keypads were there, because there was no literacy to be able to use it, it was very difficult, cumbersome for people to be able to use that. So in a way, the advent of speech, right, is another important factor which is there. And the third one is that at least some of the major media, the local language media, if you take print media, about 90 to 92% of those circulations are actually in local languages. And majority of them also have their digital presence, right? So those are also driving the consumption, whether you take Dainik Jagran, Dainik Bhaskar, Malayalam Manorama, all of those. So news content predominantly is driving a lot of local language consumption. So these are the three things that do come to my mind, which have happened, which were not there about 10 years back.
So I'm going to ask you something, and you have worked with so many brands and government agencies. What is the hesitation for, let's say, creating a website in Hindi? What is the hesitation for brands to invest the money and time in doing things like that?
Okay, so there are actually two aspects to this. Okay, one is, as you rightly put, hesitation. And the second one, which I would like to bring out, is the experience. Okay, now let's first address hesitation. Hesitation is generally what we have seen. One is that it is the English audience that has got the ability to pay, right? So a certain mindset about the difference between a typical English audience and an Indian language audience. And most of these are actually myths. They're not reality. That Indian language audience cannot be our target audience because they do not have ability to pay. Second, Indian language internet users are certain age group and above, like let's say 40, 50 and above. And the youth does not like to use Indian languages. So these are some of the dominant hesitations which are there. And of course, then you attach the fact that Indian language is rural, deeply rural, tier 3, tier 4. And majority of our market is like tier 1, tier 2. And therefore, there is no need to do that. So that's one. I think that is not backed by enough research. These are all hypothetical and assumption based. Because most of the decision makers conversant in English, they don't necessarily understand the pain of someone who does not know English. So these decisions get made without much of data. The second one is around experience, is what I said. So in by experience, what I mean is that for English language, businesses tend to do everything that is possible to make a delightful experience. So the way the entire user interface, the user experience is designed, that's really good. And there is money spent there. But for Indian languages, there is always a differential treatment which is given that, okay, anything that we can do, it's a chalta hai attitude. That if we have to be present in language, somehow we manage to do something and say, okay, as a checklist now we have for Indian language also. Then not investing enough in creating awareness. Now, if I am a business that has got digital presence, it is one thing to have something in our Indian language. It's another thing to be able to create awareness. So in English, you do campaigns, you do marketing, you do SEO, all of those kind of stuff. But for Indian languages, you don't spend a single rupee on that and think that just because we are in Indian languages, we can drive usage. So these are some of the trends that I have seen, which are kind of fixated in the mindset of the decision makers.
So I'll take you through a personal experience. So I've headed a few digital businesses. And I remember in the past when I had evaluated picking up another language, what I very quickly realized, and I'm thankful for the early realization, is that just setting up a Hindi website is not enough. You need the entire customer life cycle to be genuinely Hindi so that the experience is complete. So imagine a scenario where my website is Hindi, but the application form which gets downloaded is in English, or my IVR possibly talks better in English than in Hindi. So is a call center executive, so is a POP material, and so on. So in my experience, and this is a challenge I faced, is the entire customer journey, you need to take a lens from a genuine view of Hindi or whichever language that you're talking about. If you're in a business of buying and selling, right? When it's a simple advertising communication, it's still simpler. So if I'm selling a soap brand, I just need to solve for communication in the poster. If you're in a transaction business, it goes much deeper. The other one, and this is something which I had discussed with you earlier, Arvind, is I remember a conversation with my head of legal. He said, hey, I'm absolutely supportive of you setting up a website in Hindi. But when it comes to things like terms and conditions and legal compliance, I'm not very comfortable with the terminology because I don't understand it. So the reality is for transacting businesses, it is a very complex decision. And there are skill sets which are not sitting in organizations. How do you solve for this?
Yes. So you are right that one, companies don't think the totality of the experience. Okay. And very simple example could be that I want to run digital ad campaigns that can drive traffic.
to my landing page where I could at least capture a lead, right? Now, the ad campaign could be in a local language. The moment the user clicks on that one, the landing page is in English. The entire purpose is defeated. Okay. And I also agree with you that the challenges which are there, like you just mentioned about the legal terms and conditions. Okay. Those are for real. I'm not saying that those are not genuine, but these problems are not unsolvable problem. I mean, if a contract can be drafted, if there are legal terms in English language, Indian languages are not rocket science that we can't come up with an equivalent of that in Indian languages.
Sure.
Right? We have lawyers who are very well conversant, whose native languages are in. They can help. If we take a sample set of our customers, 15, 20 customers, and run it past them, they will tell us what needs to be done. I don't think there is enough effort that has been put in this direction. That's why I keep coming back to that most of us, including me and people like me and Vivek, because our education has been English, we tend to take decisions based on what we think. And most of those are hypothetical or assumptions without going deeper into understanding how those could be solved.
Sure.
Or whether our hypothesis is right or it is wrong. So we tend to stop at a hypothetical level without taking even the first step to be able to what needs to be done to be able to solve it.
Okay, so Arvind and Vivek, I'm going to start picking up the ante on this. Now, as you rightly said, there are clearly some demographics where English is more naturally appealing. And there are certain demographics where brands don't really see so much business potential, so they're not investing. But if you take it from another lens, there is so much video creation and consumption happening. TikTok is a brilliant example, right? There are so many voice interfaces which are coming up, and be it Alexa, be it Google, and a few others which are there. So my question is, to solve for language, is solving for text really that important? Isn't video and voice anyhow helping solve that bridge? And user interfaces, honestly, today are so simple. It naturally crosses a language divide for very smart UI UX designs. So do we really need to solve for a text conversion capability? Or is there a wave of voice and video which is anyhow sweeping very large populations?
Okay, so I will give my perspective. I'm not sure what Vivek's perspective. Maybe he will speak about it separately.
I would love this jugalbandi. Yes, let's get both perspectives.
Yes, sure. So I would like to see even in developed economies, right, where voice and video has completely replaced text. I don't find one single economy like that. Take United States, okay? And the kind of things that you mentioned, those kind of developments have been there in these countries much ahead of what has been happening in India. So in my opinion, it is not one versus the other. They will coexist. Text will coexist with voice and video, right? And now India also is a country where your print media, your newspapers, circulations is still on the upward trend. Digital could replace that. But it will still be a digital text media that will replace a print text media, okay? And if we are talking about being able to address, taking language out of the equation and probably reaching everybody through English, then we should be able to replace the entire print media audience also with the English language. The other example that I would like to give you is that, let's say e-commerce. Assume that text is completely out of the equation in an entire e-commerce discovery through transaction. And if we have to rely only on voice and video, how would we do that? Let's say I want to purchase a pair of shoes and I have a voice interface. I'm only interacting with something like Alexa or Siri, where I ask the question and then I get a response back that I want to buy a pair of shoes, right? There are, of course, various parameters which are there. What kind of shoes, for what occasion, what size, all of those kind of stuff. And let's assume that based on the options, Q&A options, which are there over voice, there are probably 100 selections which are there, out of which I may have to shortlist about 5 and then buy one. How will that process happen without text?
So Arvind, this was a deliberately spiked question. And I think both of you, you've addressed it. The reality is, text is here to stay. The reason is there are many conversations I've been a part of where people say great user design means icons should be enough and symbols are enough. You don't need text. But the reality is text is here to stay. And I don't think there's two ways of going about it. There will be places where text is mandatory, will definitely be needed. As you rightly said, be it for an e-commerce transaction, a purchase, or many other things actually. So solving for text and solving for text and languages beyond English, and I think you've clearly proven that, is clearly mandatory. It's a requirement if we want a natural flow of the next 500 million users from India. I'm totally there with you. Now, my next question is, this is like a classical chicken and egg, right? Who should be doing the heavy lifting right now? Is it the government? Is it the private sector? Someone has got to be taking the lead. Someone has got to be doing the heavy lifting. Who, according to you, should be doing that?
Again, so this is one question you should take views from, Vivek, as well. I think government should not be providing solutions.
Yes.
Solutions will come from companies. Government should more be of an enabler. Okay, what are the things that the government can do here? One is, first and foremost, fix the standards. That's like creating the infrastructure. That's infrastructure. That's a road. Unless you have road, vehicles cannot travel. So fix the standards the way Indian language standards should be. Introduce digital literacy, right? Give that status of Indian languages at least what English has got. That is what government can do. Second one is mandate that, and then of course, government, their entire G2C range of services, government to citizen services, for state government and central government. So government can make those available in Indian languages and ensure that the quality of experience is just absolutely fantastic. There is no point government speaking something and doing something different. So these are two things that government can do. Third one is that government can mandate that anybody who is doing business in India must, and our constitution says that India is a sovereign, socialist, secular, democratic republic where every individual has got freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of information. Where is that freedom of information on the internet? Where is it on digital? Right? It's not. It's discriminatory. So mandate that anybody who is having presence digitally must address, right, if not all the 22 languages, there are about 12 languages which cover 80 to 85% of our population base. To begin with, they must have digital presence in those languages. And like you rightly said, the entire gamut of experience must be addressed. It is not a part of it. That will not solve the problem. And once these things are done by government, I'm pretty sure that companies will be innovative in finding out their solution. So government, like I said, to just summarize, provide infrastructure, introduce literacy, and bring Indian languages at par with English language. And third is that mandate that in India, Indian languages are as important as English is. So digital growth must happen in both the languages.
Upendra, I will also share my perspective here, whether it is government or the private enterprises first. But to be able to answer this one, there is one small story that I have to tell you.
Sure, I love stories.
So there was a club, a small children park where children used to come and they used to play. And there was one old man, two old men, in fact. So one old man who had two children coming with him, two grandchildren. And this old man was very wise. And so they came from a Telugu family. And this old man used to teach his children a lot of different things. But one day, he ended up seeing another kid who was a friend of these two other kids. And this boy was coming from a Malayalam family. But his grandfather was very poor and very ignorant. When in trying to assess, he found out that this little Malayalam boy was very brilliant, very, very brainy. He came back and he told his grandchildren that never play with that guy. So the reason is that he ended up feeling that if whatever that he is teaching his children, since they are also playing together, they will be able to communicate with each other, then they will end up learning the same things. To be able to keep his grandchildren, you know, more knowledgeable, he said that don't play with him. Or at least whatever that you will play, he started teaching them only in Telugu. So they won't be able to communicate with him the same knowledge. Now, let us say that in our country, the intelligent grandfather is actually the government. 70 years ago or 75 years ago, when we became independent and there was no Mughals, no British, no Afghans, nobody else ruling us, they just decided that we will have higher education in English so that anybody who studies in local medium is not able to gain knowledge unless they also learn English. And if they give up school before they have become masters in English, there should be no possible means for them to gain any knowledge from anywhere. Because if higher education is only in English, you are unlikely to get any books, magazines, guidebooks, whatever else that you may think of for any knowledge in your local language. The only thing that you are allowed to read is Bollywood, Tollywood, or stories, newspapers.
So, Vivek, I agree with you 100%. And I think what both of you have been powerfully stating is for talent to truly shine and for knowledge to truly pervade equally and uniformly through society, the language barrier definitely needs to be demolished. I get it. But what I'm also hearing you saying is that the government needs to be much stronger in its legislation and enactment and enforcement of these things, if they truly want this to make it a digital India.
No, not really. I was trying to bring a different aspect to that one.
Sure.
So what I was saying is that this particular thing has given English such an undue advantage that today the non-English as a consumer base is looked at like the example that you gave, where
the poor cousin.
That's right. When you want the example that you had given, the so where the terms and conditions, your boss wouldn't want that to be in a local language because he would not understand. That is like, okay, looking down upon a non-English consumer. And that has become a culture. So today, in fact, the businesses are still having a very strong inclination towards moving local language to be able to reach out to these consumers because that is an opportunity for them. So they would probably still try and do whatever that they can. But believe me, all businesses are in no position of focusing only on technology for Indian languages. That is still a different subject that is there. So even if they would want to, they cannot solve the problems for the Indian users by and large. So the government had to do certain basics to begin with, like Arvind mentioned, fix standards, democratize the use of technology or proliferation of technology, such that the guys who are actually building great technologies are able to also enable many businesses to be able to reach out to consumers.
Got it. So on this segment, my last question before we move to a rapid fire section that we have at the end of this. So my last question in this segment, and this is to both of you. If you were to envision India in the context of languages from today, can you tell me what is that dream which both of you have? What is that India which you see 5 years hence from today?
Yeah, so remaining in context, I would say that in 5 years from now, 5 years is not a very long time, but I would still want that in 5 years from now, I would like to see Indians getting access to knowledge democratized in their languages. And that's the main reason why even Reverie has this mission of bridging the language divide on the internet. Because internet is the only democratic medium from where contributors of knowledge are able to do that without having to tax themselves. And consumers of knowledge are also able to get benefit of that without having to pay for it. So that is the main reason why English has grown so much in the internet. And the exact same way, users of all languages are also equally keen to be able to contribute and also consume. And I think that is what I would like to see India as.
Great. Arvind, your views?
Yeah, Upendra. So I do have a few things on my wish list, and top of the things those are. One is I would like to see Indian language content on the internet moving from 0.1% to 10%, at least 10% in next 5 years, right? Second one is I would like the entire digital economy in India to create at least 10 million jobs that are not dependent on English, that are created because of Indian languages. I would like to see all the government to citizen services and all the major digital companies in India making internet democratic and people in India being able to access their digital channels, right, irrespective of their language preference, as easily to be able to engage. And last but not the least, I would like to see the death of the word vernacular being used for Indian languages.
I agree with you on the third point, and I think that should be the first point. A lot of this is to do with our mindset, perception, and bias. I couldn't agree with you more, Arvind. This term vernacular upsets me. It has upset me for many years, and it will upset me in the years to come as well. There's something warped about our definitions and the way we term stuff. And we have this Angrez Firang hangover for well over 70, 80 years. Somewhere we can't seem to shake the monkey off our back.
Yeah, exactly. And initially you asked this question that what is it that you are doing? And sometimes I also use this statement to explain the problem that we are trying to solve. That I say that after 200 years of being ruled by English, we have become physically independent from English, but digitally and mentally, we are still ruled by English.
Correct.
We haven't really gotten independent yet.
Okay. So Arvind Vivek, thanks for that. Now we have a segment towards the end of the show. It's called the Rapid Fire. It's just fun. This is a great way for the listeners to get to know both of you. We've talked a lot of heavy, intense stuff. So this is just an opportunity for them to get to know each of you as individuals. And I'm sure there's so much more about you than just about language and tech. I'll put out a question. So maybe Vivek, you can answer first and Arvind, you can answer. So, and this is just very simple stuff. Okay. All right. So first crush, Vivek.
At school, maybe in class, high school or so.
Arvind?
Yeah, of course, in school. Where else?
Where else? Did both of you have the crush on the same girl or
no, another story? No, not at all. So Vivek was junior to me. He couldn't have afforded to do that.
Okay, I see some nice sibling rivalry. Okay, Vivek, mountains or beaches?
Very inclined towards both. Very hard to differentiate. Okay, mountains.
Arvind?
So I like both again. So beaches is my priority.
Okay. Vivek, favorite book?
The Little Prince.
Little Prince, okay.
Yeah. There's a French author, Antoine D. Yeah.
Very interesting choice. I haven't heard that title for many years. Arvind, how about you?
So, I'm usually interested in life after death. Okay. And I have Brian Weiss books are of a lot of interest to me and on that topic as well. So if you have to ask me, then the entire series by Brian Weiss is right now my favorite.
Awesome. Okay. One thing you wish you had invented.
Okay. So I actually did invent many things these days. So I did a lot of inventions on automobiles. So but none of those actually became my inventions in the market at all. Okay. So one of those was the gauges that we see in all automobiles these days that are able to tell us the fuel economy in which we are driving.
Okay, interesting. Arvind, how about you?
I'm not technically inclined, so I will have to give you a little different answer. If I had an opportunity, then I would reinvent myself. Okay. And like most of us, I went through the engineering career. So engineering degree is not by choice, that I would say is by compulsion, because later on I discovered that many people in India, they first become engineers and then they try to find out what is it that interests them in life. So with me, it's no different. I have very little inclination towards tech, and that's why I said that I had an opportunity, I would reinvent myself. I would rather go in the direction of anything that has to do on the creative side, which could be literature, which could be music, and anything that is not tech.
Got it. I'm also guilty of doing my engineering, so yes.
Actually, the invention that I told you, I had submitted that as my engineering project in the final year. And in fact, the actual products came into the market at least 10 years later.
Okay, wow. Okay, so describe the worst ever client in three words.
I can only think of one, that is treachery. So yeah, we have had one client that actually did not become a client. They ended up using us. So okay. I can only say treachery. That was the worst client that we had. But it gave us a lot of learning and great new products.
Arvin, how about you?
Yeah, so I relate to that experience because both of us being co-founders, that was the worst experience in our journey in terms of getting ditched. So unethical is something that I would like to mention about that client.
Okay. So Vivek, in business as in life, sometimes things don't work out. Sometimes things crash and burn. What do you do to motivate yourself to get back to work the following morning?
Okay.
What's your secret mantra?
Unfortunately, I haven't had many such feelings. Even during terrible times, somehow, I don't know. I'm a little light in that way. But if I have to answer this one, I think the team is one of my very big motivation. I almost always feel very responsible that the team should stay motivated, because for all the good work and efforts that they are putting in, we should continue to strive towards a result that we all hope to see and make impact in the society. So that makes me go back the next day anyhow.
Got it. Arvin, how about you?
So this may sound a little philosophical, but that really has kept me going as well as grounded. So I strongly consider that greed and fear are the two most dominant emotions that control us. And as human beings, we will experience those. But if none of these control us, then we are fine. So in my case, what happens is that I always prepare my mind for the worst. And the worst is that, will I ever die of hunger? And my answer is no. That makes it very simple for me to be able to go through any kind of challenge.
Okay. And the last question, the rapid fire. Your favorite language beyond English and Oriya?
So I know only three languages, Hindi, English and Odia. Odia is my mother tongue. I feel very sad that I do not know how to read and write very well. But therefore, so English is the language that I have become comfortable, because I have had to use that the most in professional ways.
All right.
Other than that, Hindi is obviously very favorite.
Okay. Arvind, how about you?
So outside of my mother tongue, which is Odia, and of course, English, Hindi is something that we've learned. Bengali, I love that language because of the sweetness of it. If you look at West Bengal, is famous for sweets, and their language is also as sweet.
Got it. All right. So Arvind, I can see that you're the romantic, which is good, very important in running a company, having romance and hope, especially in the times that we're living in. So Vivek and Arvind had an awesome time interacting, chatting with both of you. Just to summarize, I think the need for language and the need for both corporates and the government to invest in methods to increase the penetration and usage of languages beyond English in the internet is extremely important. We barely scratched the surface, but thanks so much for giving us a little peek into the work which you do, into the world that you live and breathe every day. Wish you all the very best in all your endeavors, and it's been a pleasure having you on board. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Upendra.
Thank you, Upendra. We had a very enjoyable conversation. Absolutely
indeed.
Loved it here.
Avaaz.com